not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, so it's old news, I suppose, at this stage, Conor, but we can't let it slip without having a chat about Keith Higgins retiring. So he did it on a Saturday. Maybe that was tactical. Maybe not as many people online as there might be during working hours. Who knows? But anyway, he's probably the biggest one from a Mayo point of view to leave. He's the most decorated. He's the longest serving, probably the most highly rated out of the Mayo players that have gone as well. Like, I mean, he captained Mayo to an Under-21 title in 2006 and won Young Footballer of the Year, won 4 All-Stars. He's played in 6 All-Irelands, I think 5 plus a replay. As we know, Conor, unfortunately, he didn't win any. He's played at centre. He's played at centre half forward. He's played at wing forward. He's played at wing back. He's played at corner back. Hard, such a good all-rounder, hard to know really where his best position was. Until the game kind of started changing and cornerbacks became more dynamic, I always used to think he's a little bit wasted in there.
Yeah, he was to a certain degree. Just when you mentioned Woody that when he retired on a Saturday, and it might be a bit tactical, it brought me back to, I think it was 2014, Christmas of 2014, and a statement appeared on Keith Higgins' Twitter page. It was an iPhone notes message to say that he retired. And it was a Saturday, I think, just after St. Stephen's Day, and it happened to coincide with a magical mystery tour that a few people from Ballyhonus were on at the time. It actually made the national media, but it was quickly nipped in the bud, thank God, because Keith Higgins had a lot more years left in him at that stage. But it's old news, Willie, but it's no less painful, I suppose. He's you make a good point there about it being, it is the most high profile because, or it's nearly the one that hits home the hardest because Keith has been part of the furniture for so long. I think he made his debut in 2005. Now, some people say David Clark made his in 2001, but Keith has been consistent, you know, consistent throughout. He barely missed a game. I think the semi-final against Dublin in 2019 might have been the first game that he was available for that he actually didn't make the starting 15, which goes to show you know, the quality that he's had over the years. And just as regards his best position, yeah, you have a good point there that, like, until the game changed, he was probably one of the best cornerbacks around, but, like, you weren't the only one that would have thought he was wasted at cornerback, because Mayo management's James Horan definitely did it, and I think Pat Holmes and Noel Kennelly might have tried it for a while, made attempts to get him out of there because they felt that he was wasted and put him at centre forward, or maybe tried him in the half back line as well rather than just having to play cornerback. But the thing with Keith was that there was always a fire that needed to be put out. You know, there was always a marquee forward that needed marking. And especially for a long period of his career, I'd say in the middle of his career, he was the best around at doing that, and the best certainly for Mayo at doing that. And it's one of the reasons that why Mayo were at their peak, that they were able to trust one-on-one defenders like Keith Higgins, who's one of the best at it, to go toe-to-toe with the best forwards in the country. So
yeah,
it's inevitable. Like, I mean, he barely got any game time this year. He got a little bit more than some of the other lads that retired. But it was kind of, the writing was nearly on the wall that it was going to happen. But still a bit sad that it has happened given the career that he's had in the green and red.
Yeah, exactly. There's a performance of his against James O'Donoghue in the replay down in Limerick in 2014. It's doing the rounds online. If anyone's listening, you should look it up because, like, I mean, some of the one-on-one defending, and he won't thank any of his half-back line or his half-forwards. That wasn't the way James Horan played, but he's consistently left one-on-one with James O'Donoghue. Now, it's all Keith's best parts, but there's some brilliant defending in it. And James, I think James O'Donoghue got 4 from play that day. So, you know, it wasn't all one-way traffic. But I just remember that being an absolutely incredible battle back in the day. What's going on with Colin Boyle? Colin Boyle strikes me as the type of fella who's already retired. He just couldn't be bothered releasing a statement.
When he does retire, he mightn't bother releasing the statement, will he? But I know that Mickey Conroy was on Midwest Radio there at the weekend just chatting about the various retirements after Keith Higgins had retired, and he said he's pretty sure that's it. Mickey Conroy be a clubmate of Colin Boyle's.
All right.
He didn't confirm it, but he's pretty sure that he's committed to another year. And thank God for that, to be honest. I mean, like, you know, like, we don't need another one, but, like, we, you know, Colin Boyle's 2020, you just, he's like, people forget he suffered a horrific injury at the start of last year. That I don't think it was ever clarified exactly what it was, but a pretty serious knee injury. So while he was back at the end of this year, or at the end of last year, he only made a few cameo appearances. So like I would imagine that Cullen Boyle wouldn't have wanted to go out like that. And I, like, as for the dressing room in general, I think Mayo needs Cullen Boyle to hang around. But given the amount of retirement, just with Chris Barrett gone now and Keith gone, I think that the defence, that the starting six even could do with somebody like Cullen Boyle around, because we're fairly lacking in experience there at the moment. So it looks like he's going to hang around, and thank God for that.
Okay, right. So maybe he hasn't retired. I'll have to stand corrected on that one. Paul Galvin is being mooted to coach Kerry. Now, this, he hasn't confirmed anything. It looks like he's been approached. I'd imagine from talking to Paul before, he'd absolutely love to do it because he wants to get into coaching, and the Wexford thing didn't work out. He's situated in Mayo, which is a fairly big stumbling block, and it was the stumbling block that made him, you know, have to leave Wexford. But he's not a Wexford man, he's a Kerry man, and he's a very, very proud Kerry man. And definitely we'd want to keep our eyes on this one, because anything Paul Galvin can do to take this job, if it has been offered to him, I'm sure he'll be trying his best to do it.
Yeah, and with all due respect to Wexford, it's it wouldn't have the same, like, I know that the travel arrangements proved difficult, but it wouldn't have the same pull as being involved with his native county. Do you know what I mean? So,
well, it's manager versus coach, you know,
Manager versus coach. But like, interestingly, Willie, he did, Paul Galvin did an interview with Tony Lean there, the Examiner, before Christmas, and he was talking about the Wexford thing. And kind of said how it started off as him being involved as a coach with Wexford, but it just graduated for the fact that they were looking for a manager, that he said he'd kind of step in. So I think it started off as a coaching role, which would appeal to the road that he wants to go down on, and then it ended up as a manager. So yeah, it's clear that he has that kind of that desire to get into coaching, and just even from, like, any time I hear Paul Galvin speak, or any time he does some really good columns as well, and I come away thinking differently about the game, or thinking about something that I haven't thought of before. You know, he's kind of innovative like that as well. And I think, just given what's gone on with Kerry this year, especially with Donny Buckley leaving and the cloud that he left Kerry under, I think a boost of having somebody with the caliber of Paul Galvin come in would be brilliant for Kerry. And obviously the difficulty of living in Mayo will have to be overcome, but yeah. I think given his pedigree, given his desire to get into coaching, and given the Kerry connection, he'll do everything it takes, and Kerry will do everything it takes to overcome that.
We're going to give the Examiner two plugs now, because you've just plugged the rival podcast, and now I'm going to plug an interview from Barry O'Shea in the Examiner. You're okay, you're allowed to do that, Connor. That's perfectly fine. Barry O'Shea was in the Examiner, and he was saying the way the GAA has gone, the coach and the strength and conditioning guy are the ones driving the whole thing in terms of atmosphere and the work they present to the players every night of training. They're nearly more important than the manager. And I completely agree. Like, I mean, we've had some spoofer strength and conditioning lads, and they set the wrong tone and atmosphere at training. You know, trainers who, like, they might be okay trainers, but players quickly realise, geez, this lad has a bit of an ego, he loves himself. You know, and it just suddenly then, instead of looking forward to it, you're going like, oh God, this lad. Now, I don't think people understand the importance, because the manager's not always talking to you, but the trainer, the coach, and the strength and conditioning lad are spending way more time in your ear. And if these lads, because I think a lot of these lads, they're a lot of them are well qualified. There's obviously ones that are much better than others, but most of them will get you to a decent level of either fitness or strength and conditioning, you know. But can you listen to these fellas every night go to train? And I think this is a huge important part of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the way that the kind of inter-county management has gone as well, that the day of the manager kind of taking everything and taking the training, that there's too much kind of delegation to be done. So they have to find coaches and trainers and S&C guys that they really trust to deliver their message. So I agree with everything there, bar maybe the nearly more important than the manager bit, because at the end of the day, it's the manager that's driving the philosophy of the team. So while he might not be on the grass taking every training drill or everything like that, he has to govern what the coaches and the S&C guys are doing with the philosophy that he wants to implement in mind. So he needs good coaches and S&C guys to do it, but you still need a manager with a healthy enough ego that you know, or doesn't have a big enough ego that they can't delegate, and that they're confident that the coaches and whoever they get in will deliver exactly the philosophy or exactly the style of play that they want to implement.
Yeah, no, exactly. And Paul, another bit of news on Kerry is Paul Murphy is the captain. So he's the first ever man from Rathmore to be the Kerry captain. Rathmore wouldn't have been county champions all too often. They're not a senior team at the moment, but he's the first one. Aidan O'Mahony is the one I'm kind of thinking of, but they wouldn't have won one while Aidan was around to be picked. Conor McKenna has an interview in the Irish News there, and I just thought that was one thing that was a little bit interesting. Well, number one, people need to watch out for Conor McKenna this year, because he said he's working on his fitness at the minute, just getting to that different fitness back up to the right level to bring my game to the next level. Like, Conor McKenna has another level to go to here, Conor, is basically where that line. But that's not what I want to talk about. He says Gaelic football, he's talking about the levels of fitness and stuff like that. And he says Gaelic football doesn't stop, really. He says you kick a ball over the bar and the keeper has it back in his hands in a second and the game is back on. There's not really much time for recovery. Whereas in AFL, you maybe work for 10, 12 minutes of a quarter and then you come off. You have a 4 minute break and then come back on. He's kind of talking about the fitness of stuff, but I'm sure we've talked about this before, but it's the Gaelic football being non-stop. You kick a ball over the bar, and as the ball is sailing over the bar, the goalkeeper has ran for another ball and he's tapping it to the corner back, right? So the game is back playing as the umpire is waving the flag. That's fine. Some people think this is fantastic. Oh, it's 100 miles an hour. It's great. I don't. And I'll tell you why. I don't know whether you're ever like this in club training or county training and you're playing a 15 versus 15. Like, I remember several times, especially Mick O'Dwyer, all the time you would... A point would be kicked and the goalkeeper would give it quick to a man that's free and the game would be blown up. Wait now. That's too easy. Now, everybody get back on their man. Let's make it a contest. Do you ever get your manager saying something like that? Like, I mean, it in a way, these quick kickouts to an unmarked player, for me, they do nothing to the game because the game is too disorganized when that kickout is given and players are all over the place. Whereas I think if the referee was to restart the game, like, you can't take the kick out until the referee, like a penalty or like a free, blows the whistle, gives teams a chance to push up, create contest from the kick out, you know, let the TV replay show the bloody replay before we actually don't, you know, miss the kick out. And like, would that be a terrible, tiny, small little change to the game?
Well, so how would you do it? Everybody would have to be back in their position. Would the referee give a certain amount of time, or how would you envisage that happening?
Well, I don't think you have to let every player get back on their man, but the referee gives a decent, like, say, for example, you take a quick free. Like, at what point does the referee say that's allowed or that's not allowed? Do you know what I mean? Like, so the ball goes over the bar, the goalkeeper comes out, puts it onto the tee, and the referee then blows the whistle when he's allowed to kick it out. Now, whether a referee allows everybody get back into their positions, I suppose that's maybe for a referee's discretion or not. Now I'm maybe talking myself out of it when I start talking about referee's discretion. Maybe there's a 10 second after a point is scored. Here's another thing. If a goal is scored, the player, we're going to talk to Shane Curran after in part two about his Laker Gale. Did you see the clip of him taking the penalty? Like, this fella robbed a penalty off his teammate, scored it, ran to the terrace, kissing his head. Like, what scenes? Like, if you score a goal now in Gaelic football, you can't even wave up to the crowd and celebrate because the kick out's going to come out and you're going to look like an Egypt. You know, I don't know. I just think there's a better way to add to the drama of the game. Number one, you'd allow a player to do a small celebration. And number two, you will wait until there'll be, you know, this kick out will be a contested kick out.
Yeah, no, I get it. Just going back on Shane Curran as well, he was wearing those big, massive football goalkeeper gloves. He was nearly doing the jazz hands with it. It was a brilliant scene. For anyone who didn't see the clip, I'd advise them to go back and watch it.
When did they go out of fashion? Because midfielders always used to wear goalkeeper's gloves. I'm thinking of Kieran Whelan immediately, but that doesn't happen anymore.
The last person I can remember wearing them is Kieran Whelan, to be honest. Yeah. I'd love if somebody brought them back. Like Shane Welsh bringing back the Macassas in the last couple of years. If somebody could bring back those massive old sport goalkeeper gloves, it'd be brilliant. So, yeah, to get back to your point, well, I suppose, yeah, I do get that, because players now are conditioned that, like, they can't even celebrate a goal, but, like, it's got nearly to the stage where you can't even watch to see if your point goes over the bar. Do you know what I mean? Do you know, it's a natural habit. When you kick the ball, you just stand staring at the ball for a few minutes, for a few seconds. But if you do that now, your man is gone 20 yards away from you, and the goalkeeper's already lining up the quick kick out. And if you're caught doing that, your manager will, your manager will be mad at you because you weren't paying attention. So players are so conditioned to do that these days. And I get that, that's a kind of a lost part of the game that's a bit annoying. The only thing I'll say is that your suggestion, for example, to let people back into position or to close to be back into position, would it be something that again favors the stronger teams? If you're playing against Dublin, for example, and you're giving them another opportunity to get a press on, whereas a team in the Leinster Championship, for example, are playing against them and they find the way to get around that is to get quick kickouts off. And again, I haven't thought about this through, Willie. This is purely hypothetical. But it's just the game has moved on to that extent now that I think it would be quite hard to move it back to a situation where the kickouts change that much that a referee has to wait for, 10 to 15 seconds. And even the worst thing about it is the man that's largely responsible for the game moving in that direction is Stephen Cluxton, who's straight out of the old school. It's even not one of the kind of younger Cubs that's kind of been responsible. So I get what you say, Willie. Whether it's going to happen, I don't know, but it does. You are losing something when you're not getting the likes of Shane Curran being able to celebrate the way he did that time.
I do take your point. Like, how long is the referee supposed to wait? The referee, it's not the referee's responsibility to look around to see has every man a man, like Mikko would have done back in our Leash training, or that's too. I remember shouting at goalkeepers even in those games, come on, will you wait? Like, that's too easy. No one's marking anyone. Like, I mean, just stop and kick it out. I know that was a different era. But I don't know. I just think if I need to put a bit of thought in it, maybe when the umpire waves his flag, there's 10 seconds after that, then the referee blows his whistle. And if you haven't gotten up to your man within that 10 seconds of the point being awarded, which is officially awarded, well, then that's on you. You know, the referee maybe count to 10, blow the whistle. I don't know. I think that maybe, it might add something to the game. But look, it's hard to know. Anyways, we're going to know tomorrow, Connor, when the season is going to start finally. Well, we'll have some clarity on it anyways, because the GAA is going to announce. They'll obviously have to wait and see how the public health situation happens. So we have players all over the country in pretty much the exact same position as they were in last March and last April, and one of them is Galway all-rounder Aidan Hart, and he joins us on the line now. Does it feel a little bit like Groundhog Year, Aidan?
Yeah, small bit of right. Funny times. Well, we'll find out tomorrow now when the league is put back to. So kind of just a small bit unsure again, a bit like last year, but sure, look, it's January, so I suppose for this month anyway, everyone is trying to get down maybe the little few extra pounds they put on over Christmas and trying to get a base fitness level again. So it's not too bad.
Yeah, well, in a weird way, you're in better shape than you ever have been in January, I'm sure, because the championship ran into December.
Yeah, that too. I suppose with the training now in January, we haven't been doing an awful lot of the long distance stuff that you might have been doing in a November or December before, So we only had about maybe the 6 week break that brought us into the second or third week of January again. Like, so it hasn't been too bad. And I suppose, that base fitness has been there. And look at, I suppose, any GA inter-county player anyway at the moment doesn't exactly leave tools down for 6 weeks,
Yeah.
So everyone is kind of tipping along, doing a bit and just doing the best they can with the facilities, I suppose, or lack of.
Yeah. And like, even from a strength and conditioning point of view, you might do more heavy stuff in January, but when you haven't had that much downtime, has all that preparation been thrown kind of into a different area?
Yeah, absolutely. We're extremely lucky. And of course, he's been mentioned before to have Lucas as our head S&C coach. And he's, as a person anyway, he's so driven, he's brilliant and so approachable, and we're very lucky to kind of have him on the phone any minute of the day. He makes himself available to us if you need to ask any questions. So we've been extremely lucky that way. I suppose where we may be losing out maybe is the lack of having an open gym to us where we can do collective sessions and stuff like that. So it's just kind of make and do as best you can, and I suppose using the kind of national parks or whatever blade of grass you can get to keep the running up. But certainly collective-wise, I suppose the gym has taken a bit of a hit that way.
Using bags of sugar for your shoulder press there, Aidan, at home in the house. Come here, have you been able to do a debrief on last year? Like, I'm just looking in from the outside, and I know you Galway boys, after winning an All-Ireland, set yourself hugely high standards. I'm looking at last year having been a positive year for Galway. I don't know how you look at it.
Yeah, I suppose. Sure, look, I, as a player anyway, I completely disagree with you. But that's just, look at that. Yeah, I know we keep mentioning having won that Ireland, but like it seems like, you know, to a player, that seems a long, long time ago now. And of course, in Galway, with a lot of other counties in the competition, the expectation every year is Ireland. And when you don't, it's of course then extremely disappointing, and you have to go back to the drawing board. Like, you know, even though it was a 6-week turnaround, it'd be kind of wrong to say you just pick up and go again, because obviously if you do that, you'll get the same result this year. So it's kind of back to the drawing board and see where we went wrong and things we can work on. And of course, doing that personally as well, and then trying to bring that to the group, which again has been, you know, quite difficult when we haven't been meeting collectively and kind of unsure as to when the league will start. So just trying to do our best, really. Like,
well, that's it. Like, I mean, what can you do a debrief on a Zoom call with the full panel? Like, is that even possible?
Yeah, it's hard, I suppose. It's hard, you know. I suppose that if you'd ever do a debrief before, you get into a room really and have a good chat about it.
Yeah.
Which of course makes things an awful lot easier. But no, our contact now has been fairly minimal enough. In terms of that and the hurling side of it, it's really just been based around S&C and just trying to get that base in for the season ahead. I suppose it's very hard to talk hurling and stuff like that now at the moment when you're not doing it visibly on the pitch and doing their walkthroughs and stuff like that. So that's kind of been parked for the present time anyway.
Yeah, come here. Like, I mean, your performance against Limerick was really, really good. You like, I mean, again, I don't want to say you'll be happy with getting close to Limerick, because you want to beat Limerick. You beat Tipperary. You should have beaten Kilkenny. You know, you had plenty of highs during the year. You beat Wexford well. You scored that brilliant goal to beat Tipperary. You ended the year with an All-Star nomination. So, like, I mean, from a personal point of view, it wasn't a bad year at all.
Yeah, again, no, I suppose I'd be taking the kind of more prudent approach towards things, to be honest with you. As I said earlier, like, I suppose when you end the year losing, it's extremely disappointing. And personally, I suppose for myself, you should look at, like, every year and like life itself, you have your ups and downs. And I would have been disappointed personally with my own performance against Limerick, but you know, that's just a person thing. Everyone kind of looks at their own mistakes, really, and you kind of think they were the only mistakes made in games, you know. So that's kind of where it ended for me, and I'd be hoping, like, to set that right this year and have a look at maybe where we did go wrong. Yeah, there were a few ups, of course, in the year, beating Wexford and beating Tipperary, but, you know, ultimately, the main prize and the main goal is the All-Ireland, and when you don't achieve that, it is, of course, disappointing for the group.
So, like, I mean, are you talking about that ball that you miscontrolled at the end, you know, of the Limerick game? Is that kind of but, like, I mean, I suppose, like, is that your fault, or is that, you know, should that ball just been put down the field at that late stage of the game?
No, Lucas, I suppose it was, you play it as you see it as well, like, and I suppose probably just a little bit of lack of composure for myself anyway, I thought. Kind of gave to the problem that ensued afterwards. I think we're a point down at the time, and that put them two up. So look, that's just, I suppose that's a personal thing. You always look at it on your own side. I should probably know a little bit better now when I'm there for so long. But everyone has their own kind of personality and character, I suppose. And I would always look at maybe what I could improve on more so than what I probably did right in games. And it can be a good way to approach things, and I suppose it can also hold you back, and it's just trying to find the common ground in the middle.
Yeah, maybe it is. Like, I mean, is this how to get, like, you obviously started in 2008, so you've seen huge changes and you've been all over the bloody place. You started out as a corner forward and now you're a corner back. Like, I mean, that type of ball you got at the end of the Limerick game would have been unheard tell of even 4 or 5 years ago. Like, Limerick have kind of brought this playing everything through the lines into the game where you have to be concentrating non-stop, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose it probably started maybe 15 years ago when you go back to maybe the Cork teams and Newtown Shandrum, how they used to play it as a club team. And just, of course, it became a more possession type game. And we can see that throughout the games in the last few years in particular. It's really moving forward, heads up hurling now, and just trying to find a teammate directly with a pass. So Yeah, I suppose if you were playing cornerback maybe 20 years ago, you wouldn't even be looking at the goalie pucking it out.
Yeah.
It'd be a lot different game, all right. But that's the way it is. And I suppose, as you said, it depends how some teams set up against you. Some teams like to drop their half forwards deep under the puck outs. And of course, some teams then just have, like Limerick in particular, have a very strong half back line in the three players that were there in particular this year. So you're trying to, I suppose, work the ball through the lines and maybe avoid that area. And sometimes it can be a little more difficult than others.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, I mean, the skill level has gone through the roof because, like, I mean, I can imagine, you know, towards the end of the game and someone has the ball and instead of giving it down, it give you a scuttery one along the ground where you have to control. Like, I mean, do you know what I mean? Everything now is just completely based around touch, and it doesn't matter what kind of ball you're given, it's going through the lines and it's up to you to make the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fine margins now, really. And I suppose, look at the test of your character and skill is, can you do it in those pressure times? You know, that's when it is really important. Like, you could be doing a drill, a training there, and the drill could be absolutely flying. And it's just, I suppose, the difference between the winners and losers is, can you do it at those particular times? And I suppose for myself, I didn't at the end of the game. And that's something I'd be looking to improve on anyway, definitely going into the season. But there's no doubt the skill level has skyrocketed in the game. I even see from training our own young lads there in the secondary school in Tulla and Clare last year. Like, the skill level they have in drills and in matches is really incredible. And you'd wonder, when you were their age of 15 or 16, was your skill level up to that? And I wouldn't have thought so. Just how meticulous they are, and they mind themselves so well. So there's no doubt the game is seriously improving and continuing to improve year on year.
No, it definitely is. Come here, the goal against Tipperary, that just finished off what was an absolutely, well, it didn't really finish it off because it was the 66th minute. But, like, I know you played corner forward, you've played everywhere really. And, like, I mean, was it in your head to go for a point at all? It was 66 minutes, a point would have put one in it. You were well in the game at that stage anyway. But, like, I mean, from that distance out, you buried it in the bottom corner.
Yeah, I'd say if I watched the replay and then had to do it over again, I probably would have tapped it over. I don't look. It's sport at times, isn't it? It's instincts, and you need a slice of luck. I probably didn't realise, maybe how, not that I was 40 yards out or anything, but I probably thought I was a little closer to goal at the time. But as I said before, I just happened to be on the end of which was a great team move, really. Like, if you think back, just thinking in my head now, the start of it, I think Joe was just going to have a shot where it was kind of, you know, reflections up to 2017 finally against Tip, where he thought he was just going to slot this, and the Tip defender made an excellent block down. But, you know, Joe being Joe, like, he goes back and wins the ball then again, like, which was, you know, incredible. It could have been very easy for a player maybe to step aside and let someone walk out past you, but of course he doesn't. And Brian Concannon to Jason, I think to Adrian Toohey, and then I just ended up on the end of it. But, you know, it was a really great, really good team goal. And, look, thankfully, I suppose, at the time, it went in, and it was a great thing personally, again, at the time. But as I was trying to say to a lot of people, I suppose, in the locality and at home, that when I got home from Limerick that evening, I didn't really think about it much after that, to be honest, because you knew what was coming down the tracks a week later. And I suppose maybe that was the prudent side of me coming out again, you know, trying to just get on to the next task at hand, like, and that was kind of the way it finished.
Yeah, I think it was Jason Flynn that opened the whole thing by kind of sending across field. Two, he gave you a loopy hand pass where you had to wait for ages for it to drop down into your hand as a Tipperary defender, as a Tipperary defender is sprinting out towards you.
No, that was all right. I sure. As they say to them all left-handers would be awkward enough anyway.
Come here. Which is your favourite position then?
I suppose in the backs anyway would be, to look at anywhere at all, if you can get on the field, is great. So anywhere at all you can get on. But yeah, I did start in the forwards, and I always played underage with the club. And coming into about, I suppose, 2015 or 2014, actually, I started playing wing back mainly then with the club. Jerry Spellman from Clarenbridge was over us at the time, and sure, I just grew into the position. I suppose I loved the fact of facing the ball and, I suppose, having the pace maybe to get back if I made any mistakes or anything like that. It's great to take you out of trouble. But in 2008, I played a good bit actually in our training games under Ger Lucknan as a cornerback, and I played a bit in the backs for UCC when I was in college down there as well. So, yeah, I suppose like that, sometimes when you're versatile, you can end up kind of nailing down a position nowhere. So yeah, it's great, I suppose, to settle maybe as a wing back or cornerback and kind of try and nail down a position there.
Well, that's it. I think, is it fair to say that good hurlers can play anywhere? Like, I mean, they kind of say that in football, but I could see Joe Canning playing centre back easily.
Oh, absolutely, no doubt. Look, he has the hands, the wrists, the two sides, the brain. So, and we've seen that down through the years. Look at Kyle Hayes most recently there, and Pádraic and Tommy Welsh would say going back through the years. And I know there's loads more. Like, but yes, if you just compare all of those together, they're really good hurlers, great in the air, great off both sides, and great thinkers of the game. So I suppose it's easy for them to slot in.
Yeah. Come here, you mentioned that Lucknan brought you in the panel in 2008. I didn't realise. I thought he brought you in as a forward. I think he might have given you... you played under Lucknan in 2008, and then you were back on it in 2010. I'm just trying to picture Ger Lucknan in a dressing room versus Micheál Donoghue in a dressing room.
Yeah, I suppose a little bit different, but times have changed as well, you know. But I really enjoyed the year in 2008 with Ger, which I suppose I was new onto the panel at the time. I was only 18, 19 years of age. I suppose it's the way you would encourage any young player not to be now, is I was kind of really happy to be in there. Now, I was still given everything. I didn't take from my... I wasn't just happy to be there or anything like that, you know. But I suppose when the year ended, I didn't feel as disappointed as I would be now, if that makes sense. And I suppose that's what you'd be trying to encourage any young players coming onto panels, and that the time is now, that not to be thinking, I'll be here now and I'll feel my way for 2 or 3 years and then get going. You got to try and really hit the ground running. And that's something, I suppose, that is hard to get out of younger players. We've seen maybe Conor Whelan has done that in recent times, and Brian Concannon, and I suppose Adrian Mullen there, and Kilkenny and Owen Cody, where you've seen them really come into their own in their first year or two. And I suppose it's trying to get the younger lads to do that now, and to put the pressure on lads that are there for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, look, there's no doubt about that. It's not too many players come out and, you know, really make a mark in the very first year.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially, I suppose, with the physicality and the way the game has gone now, it can be hard. But I suppose the teams that can unlock that will be better players going forward.
Yeah. Come here, you're a teacher. So, like, I mean, this whole COVID thing has had a direct impact on your career. Are you one of the teachers that backed the union that you wanted to do it from home, or would you like to be in the class?
I suppose the number one thing is health, and I can only speak for myself. I suppose at my age or whatever, I would like to be in the classroom, but that's only a personal thing. I can't speak for my colleagues. I can't speak for students that might have somebody vulnerable at home. So, of course, that's completely taken out of your hands, and then your own opinion is irrelevant and it doesn't really matter. But we're working away now online at the moment. In fairness, the kids have been, they've been excellent. Like, I'm sure it's not easy in some areas, without Wi-Fi and stuff, you're snookered straight away. But the kids have been excellent, and they're really grown into it. And it's up to us then to keep them engaged over the next few weeks and keep the lessons interesting. And I know education is only... it's a big part, but it's only, one part of school as well. And you would miss the dialogue with them and, the bit of crack and stuff like that. And even training the teams in school and the chat with your own colleagues and things like that. So, as we referred to this post before we started the call, you're thinking that you're starting to lose it a small bit in this month. And I suppose that's just the lack of communication and meeting people. But look, we're lucky to be healthy, and there's a lot more people that would hope to be the same way, and we have to be grateful for that.
Yeah, well, that's what I keep reminding myself before, instead of cracking up, is that, look, other people are in a much worse situation. But, like, I mean, that I can only keep repeating that to myself so long, like, But another thing with you, Aidan, is that your parents have a pub in Gort, so they're directly affected by it as well, even worse, because you're continuing to work, even though it's online, it's not as, enjoyable. But your parents' pub, I presume, hasn't been open. Well, unless you do food.
No, so no food. So we'd be traditionally Irish pub, I suppose. So pub has been closed now since last March. We got that small bit of reprieve. Was it September, October time, I think, where you could have the 15 outdoors or whatever. So that was maybe for 2 weeks or so. But no, being completely closed. And for look at it, it's very hard on them as well, especially with Dad there at home, who would be maybe the opposite of myself, would talk hurling 24 hours a day. So he just loves, you know, meeting people and having the chat. But it's a good job. They have a bill phone at home, and he's free calls to other landlines, because there's some nights there I've been told that he's been staying on calls for 2 or 3 hours. So that's probably keeping him going as well. And sure, much like ourselves, look at, we're younger, I suppose, and we're out and about a small bit. And it's for those that it's very hard as well, you know, for the older generation that aren't used to being kind of supposed to all have to do or stay indoors. It's harder on them as well. And they certainly miss the dialogue and the interaction with other people, because it's really, I suppose, an old Irish thing, isn't it, to get out there and talk to people. Whereas,
yeah,
I suppose those younger people wouldn't mind if we got a day or two without any contact. But it is tougher on them. And sure, look at, hopefully rolling into the summer, things might open up again.
Hopefully rolling into the summer, anyone passing Gort can call into the pub and it'll be open. That's what we can all hope for.
Absolutely. And you'd miss, you know, I'm sure that they miss that too, the spontaneous side of who was going to come in the door next, you know, that
kind of
thing. Like, down through the years there, Dad would have friends, especially from all over Ireland, and some that might be back from America and England, and they'd drop into the pub. And, you know, it's great to see them and catch up on old stories and times. And even for myself, lads that would have hurled against over the time, would be stopping in, I suppose, on stag parties and all those kind of things that you kind of feel now, did they ever happen before? But hopefully now over the summer, it would be great now to have that interaction with people again.
It would, of course. Liz, I'm putting a visit into my diary anyway. And come here, thanks very much for taking the call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Okay. Bad boys, what you want?
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out, and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out, and they're roaring at me, "Hey, Toffrey, you free state bastard." and next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So Shane Curran stars in the latest Lake Regale on TG Cahir, and it's on television tonight. It's a very enjoyable episode, I have to say. I watched it this morning, and Shane joins us on the line now. Enjoyable for you to watch back, Shane? I presume you've seen it already.
I haven't, actually. Woolly, funny enough, no. All I've seen is the snippets of what's been shown in the adverts, to be fair. And normally, in normal times, I think all of the people that have been around the Loch Craig would meet up, and that you'd have your night out, maybe 2 or 3 weeks with your friends and those that participated in the show. But unfortunately, with obviously lockdown and COVID, that hasn't been possible. So no, you're probably more aware of what's in it than I am, Willie, to be honest about it. So I'm shooting in the dark.
Right, okay. Well, I have to. Well, listen, you can trust me. It's a very good episode. It's a nice bit of recognition as well, Cake, to be fair.
Look, you know, I suppose Joe Malloy of the day, I think, you know, when he said that, when Loch Regale come calling, it's a bit like the Oscars, I suppose. And look, it's a huge, huge honour. Not so much, you know, obviously on a personal level, but I think obviously for people that I played with, for my family, indeed, Sharon, my long-suffering wife, and my two kids, Mam and Dad, but obviously Dad, Mam has passed on, and Dad is still alive. But and you know, the clubs I played with, I suppose, and the players I played with, I'd like to extend a big thanks. And look at when people deem you worthy of something like this, it's a huge honour, I think. I think I'm only the second goalkeeper, and Dermot Earley, I think, from Roscommon, was the only other one as well from our county. So, look, there are probably many people, more deserving of it than I, but just delighted and it's something that'll be there, I think, you know, for the kids and grandkids in time and whatever else comes along, please God.
So I want, Kamir, I want to start with the, you said you haven't seen it yet, you've only seen the promo clips. Well, the best promo clip I've seen of it, I don't know how many are out there, is the penalty in the minor final in 1989. So Galway are leading the match by a point, for anybody who hasn't seen this yet. These are incredible scenes. Galway are leading by a point. You have a young Gannon fella, is it, that was supposed to take the penalty and tap it over the bar to draw up the game, and this is going to a replay. It's pretty much the last kick of the game, and you had other ideas, Cake. You come running from behind him, and in fairness, what, as good a penalty as you'll ever see.
Well, to be honest about Woolley, I had a bit of a tease because I'd been the nominated penalty taker, and I'd missed one previous in the game.
Oh.
So I'd missed one about in the first half, and hit the crossbar. And, you know, to me, when you're the penalty taker, you're the penalty taker, whether you lose one, miss one or not. But the instruction came for Glennon to kick the ball over the bar. Now, to be honest about it, if you look at the video, it took him about a half an hour to set the bloody thing up and look back at it. And all he was doing was tapping it over the bar from 14 yards. So I said to myself, geez, there's a bit of an opportunity here, you know. So bang. I was a bit annoyed. It was one of those things that you shouldn't have done. But I'm forever grateful that it did hit the net, because if it didn't, I'd be in the Amazon forest for the last 30 years trying to figure out how to get back to Roscommon somewhere with my head held anyways between my shoulders.
So the fact that you'd missed a penalty, you overruled the manager, you ran in front of one of your teammates to take this penalty, and you ended up scoring. This goes against everything a teammate and a player on a team should do.
Absolutely. I have to hold my hands up there. It was really... it was impulsive, but it was also wrong at the time.
It was wrong. Like, you scored it, but, like, I mean, there's no doubt it was wrong. But, like, what a bit of drama all the same.
Well, it was drama, all right, but the drama was only... Really, there was no drama there. The drama was only beginning, really, afterwards, because... you know, we were the senior game obviously came on after that, and we took our place in the stand, and everyone was congratulating us and the whole lot, the whole shebang. So we went back with the senior team back to the Travellers' Friend, as it was at the time, in Castlebar, and we were having our dinner. And I'll never forget, because these three fat fellas coming, the archetypical kind of county board buck, you know, the suit on them and the big belly, and the three of them marched in, just took the cup up off the table and said, "Sorry guys, Galway have won this particular show. Sorry." we're looking at them going out the door. But it soon became pretty serious, because you know, word was breaking that the game had been awarded to Galway, and a bit of somber kind of a journey back on the bus to Roscommon. And the first stop was Fitzmaurice. Jerry Fitzmaurice was in Ballinlough, and this was the lead story on the news. So it became pretty kind of got out of hand then, the seriousness of it, I suppose.
Right. When you were on the bus, you went from hero out in the pitch when you thought you had won it to the referee saying that you were inside the 21 when the penalty taker was taking it, and therefore the penalty was ruled out. So when you realised the cup was taken off you, did you go from hero to everybody looking at you?
I didn't, well, like, you know, you kind of just say, I don't know what's going on. So you're kind of playing thick then, like, you know, I done my job, but anyhow, what can you do? You know, I mean, I just remember the day. It's been very, very, I mean, the media were at our house, and then there was a lot of stuff and local stuff then. And there was a big meeting in the hide between the senior team, and the senior team were threatening to veto the match and the replay. And anyhow, look, a common sense kind of ruled through, and Galway, to be fair, offered a replay the following, it was 10 days after, actually, in Castlebar. And to be honest, though, the one person that's really missed in all this is John Cosgrove, who was the referee, you know. And I've never met John since before or after the replay. He'd done the replay. I think, you know, it led to his refereeing career being curtailed. But a lovely man, a gentleman, unfortunately, that those incidents or that incident probably curtailed his refereeing career going forward. I think he ended up being a very good administrator. But we got a penalty in the replay in the first 7 minutes of the replay in Castlebar, which we won by. I scored the penalty, and we won the game with a goal in extra time, in injury time, by a guy by the name of Eddie Ennis, who was from St. Bridget's, who never played football after, would you believe, or very rarely. And we ended up being beaten by a very famous Derry team led by Anthony Toole and Gary Coleman in 1989.
Right. Okay. Geez, that was a fair year. And like, I mean, when you see that penalty being taken, you think you're after running up from the goals, but you're obviously you're a forward at underage level, and then you're called into the senior panel as a forward in 1990.
I've been a forward really all my career, really. Underage career in Gaelic football. I made my debut for Roscommon in 1990. I think actually against Down, who went on to win the All-Ireland the following year, because that time you'd make your debut. The leagues were in the winter, the start in October, and you had October, November. Then you had the drinking sessions in December and January. You were trying to get fit for the February recall. So, I made my debut in 1990 against Down. Played in Croke Park actually that year as well against Dublin in the league. We got hammered, and I remember that quite well because it was the day of an Arsenal Tottenham Hotspur match. Dublin kicked the shit out of us. Dublin bet us by about 20 points or something. But that was my intro into intercounty football. And then I played all my club football outfield for almost up till I was about 29, I think, actually, when I got married and came to Bridget. I really ended in 1999 playing outfield, and my back was giving me an awful lot of jib and I was picking up injuries, so I ended up going back into goal. But I'd always played the outfield in goal in soccer, so I played at 7 or 8 years League of Ireland experience in goal with Athlone, and all my formative soccer with Castlereagh Celtic was always played in goal as well, so it was kind of a hybrid kind of a mixture, really, you know.
So I'm wondering, like, did you enjoy goalkeeping? Because you strike me as somebody, and it made sense to me when I understood that you were a full forward and a scoring full forward, you know, and really enjoyed the game. You always struck me that you were bored in the goals kick. You used to run out the field. You know, maybe you take a 1-2 or you go up the field. I think you were just kind of getting into the game, you know, psychologically, did you have to actually stop yourself and say, here, hang on a second, this is nothing like what I am used to?
Not really, no, because I suppose when you play outfielders, you know, you kind of have a certain skill set anyhow, you know, you're generally, your skill set is elevated over the goalkeepers in particular. And if you talk about goalkeepers nowadays, but in my time, I had that skill set as an outfield player, and I couldn't understand why goalkeepers were being held back. You know, you could play, that time forwards would never chase you. So once you've gone past them, you're automatically nearly a free man, you know. Yeah. And we've often discussed this at training and practice. Look, if I have the ball and I can come out, what's the point in just kicking it 45 or 50 yards away to nobody and maybe 50-50s? If I can come with the ball and create an extra man, well, then that frees somebody else up. And it's not like now where your full forward line drops back to your 45 or even your halfway line and allows the goalkeeper or the defence to bring the ball out unchallenged. You know, when I was bringing it out, you'd be bringing it out because to create the extra man, or you'd have to beat a forward, or you'd have to play a 1-2. But that was kind of something that was built into anyhow because you were an outfield player. It was only just you were doing it from a different position. And because it was different, people didn't understand, you know, the reasons why you would do this. But I was very fortunate. I had really good managers who actually could see the benefit of it, and that the team wasn't suffering for creating that extra man or giving that pass that was taken out forwards or taken out resistance or whatever it may be.
You were before your time, really. Like, I mean, you talk about the goalkeepers kicking 45s. You were doing that regularly in the 90s. Short kickouts, you were doing that regularly in the 90s. The forays up the field, like Graham Brodie, you know, has everybody thinks of Graham Brodie, whereas you were doing that in the 90s. It took a little bit of a while for it to catch on, maybe.
Well, from certainly 90s and most of the noughties. But like, to be fair, Willie, we live in a different era now. I mean, that time games weren't really covered that much. You know, I mean, we've got brilliant coverage now of seeing the likes of Graham and seeing the Comerfords and seeing Sean Pattons and, you know, seeing David Clarence, Rob Henley, Stephen Tuxens, all these guys, and they're getting brilliant exposure, which is fantastic. You know, and I think the game is much better now than it was in my day or your day or anyone else's day. I think the players are much better, they're much fitter, the skill set is better, and the goalkeepers are better. You know, now I do believe that, you know, they're better in some. I don't think that we still have got the perfect goalkeeping. A lot of the goalkeepers we haven't got all of the skill sets. Some of them are good kickouts, but they're not really good shot stoppers. Some of them are good in the air, but they're not good shot stoppers. They're not good kickout merchants. But there's a lot expected of the Gaelic goalkeeper now. And a lot of that has got to do with obviously the exposure of Stephen Tuxton and the Dublin team. But yeah, there was a few, you know, I'm happy to say, just delighted, you know, that, you know, I was doing it maybe a lot earlier than anybody else, and but I couldn't do that if I didn't have really good managers and good players as well. Yeah. Who would say, well, yeah, okay, I'll cover for Shane. I remember when David Casey was fullback, or John White, they'd know that if I got the ball, I caught the ball 20, 25 yards out from goal, and there was nobody beside me, that I was going to set up the attack from there. And they'd just sit back. And we never, like, it was very rare occasions, if I can't really remember any, that you'd leave the ball behind you, or you were tackled and lost the ball, or the ball went in over your head or anything like that. But it's just a very good communique between us all. And as I said, it was down to the managers, really. Tobin, when he came in, he let us do our thing. Tommy Carr said, look, you go and work on your kickouts with the players. He just left it to us, because to be fair, a lot of the managers didn't have the expertise anyhow. They didn't. Yeah. They don't know about goalkeeping. They don't know about the dynamic of the game. And obviously Stephen has taken it on another level, and other teams and players have taken it on another level. But look at the 1-1 I kicked against Sligo in 2004, I think still is a record for a goalkeeper to score a goal in the point in the same match. So these type of things,
that's not bad.
It's good to be part of that journey, you know, and good to be part of. But you couldn't do it without the players. You couldn't do it unless you practiced it, unless you trained. And the likes of Karen Mannion were great midfielders, like Fergal O'Donnell, Stephen Lohan, another top class midfielder. I remember we were taking short kickouts from midfielders to the cornerback position back 15, 20 years ago. But to be honest about it, a lot of that came as well from, if you remember back to 19, if you ever look back on it, the 1998 All-Ireland final. And I remember Martin McNamara and I we obviously play FBD league games against each other. Martin was a really, really, really top keeper. And himself and Walsh had kind of perfected this short kick out over his left shoulder that nobody really kind of cottoned onto. And they destroyed Kildare with that particular tactic in the All-Ireland final in 1998. Now, Martin retired after that. He's a bit older than me. But he was a really top class exponent of the short kick out. Mahoney must have just seen it and coached him and just encouraged him, really.
A lot of those things back then, Cake, like you mentioned, are almost done between players rather than an actual tactic from the manager. It's almost like from a conversation you might decide to do it yourself.
Well, yeah, and I think if you look at the likes of Buxton with Dublin, it's driven by the players. That's not driven by Jim Gavin or anybody else. It's driven by the players, because you've got to see the game. Managers and coaches have got to see the game through the lens of the player, not through the lens of themselves. Because at the end of the day, it's not them, it's not Jim Gavin that makes the decision on the pitch, it's the Stephen Buxton. So they have to be facilitated by the Jim Gavins, but the players, you've got to see the game through the lens of the player. That's usually important. So the players are confident in making those decisions themselves without rancor or ridicule from the manager if it goes wrong. And you hear them talking now, they practice 3 or 4 hours a week, probably in Dublin's case, to practice 2 or 3 hours a day at that. But a lot of counties, it has to come from the player. It has to be player driven, but it also has to have the kind of newness of the manager to overlook it and say, yeah, well, okay, if you're comfortable with it, I'm comfortable with it, and you go and play. I think that's really the key to it. The players are so comfortable now executing what they practice that they can do it short, long, medium, whatever it is. But the game has changed now. I mean, in our day, in my day in particular, well, like, I'm only retired from club football 5 or 6 years. So I played right into my mid-40s. But in my inter-county days, it really was a six-on-six. So your six backs matched your six forwards, and you had a big... You had a big void in around the middle of the field where you were kicking to 2-on-2 or possibly maybe a 3-on-3 if you had a dropout wing forward or dropout wing back or the maybe tall. So the spaces weren't as great as they are now. You take the Dublin short kick-out game. Well, that's facilitated by the opposing team dropping off two players. It makes the short kick-out very easy for somebody that has the skill set of the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Space in Crow Park is so bloody simple. You can kick it. Sorry, when you have a 4-on-6, it's much, much more difficult than a 6-on-6. You know, so and now that the squeeze, the press has come on, you have to adapt a little bit better. So you have Patton going on to beat that. So I think it's all really good. I think the game is brilliant now. There's more tactical awareness. There's more things. It's more inventive. It's more creative. It's more innovative. Players have to think a little bit better. And that's why I think we have a better product.
So you had some great years with Tommy Carr. He made you captain and leader of the team. You know, and you responded really well to that. And then John Mahon came in 2008. And he did the opposite. He dropped you along with four other established players. He pretty much finished your career. I'm wondering, like, you're around the circuit on different shows and stuff. Have you ever bumped into Mahon after that?
Oh, I have. Like, I've bumped into him numerous times. And you're not, like, at the end of the day. I think, you know, hey, look, it's a beaten dock now. It's done. It's dusted. What really annoyed me at the time, I'll never forget, I was in the office and Sharon came in to me and she said, look, this is the way, and this is what they think of you now. And I said, what are you on about? And dude, this heading over the one of the front of the local papers, you know, the famous five are dropped. And the connotation around it at the time was we were kind of hard men. We were hard to handle. We were, and yeah, maybe we were, but we were also top players. And yeah. Funnily enough, I was actually coming into probably one of me the best time of my career. I was 33, 34. I was playing really super football. So was Frankie, to be fair, and Nigel Mixon and all them. And Frankie was an all-star. There was a bit of a fallout, no doubt, from Tommy's era. The lads may have felt, you know, that they were hard done by. But I don't think I was ever kind of in pigeonhole in that group. But there was a cohort inside the county who gave Mahon bad advice. And I think, you know, if John looked back on that now, he'd say that, you know, one thing I'd always say about managers, and when you become a manager yourself, always give players the opportunity to play themselves off the pitch.
Yeah.
Don't drop people. Just don't drop people or avoid dropping people. And that's the advice I give to any young guy now. Don't drop people just because you hear somebody else say something. You make your own mind up on them. Can they perform for you? Because, like, I would have been known as a maverick. I would have been hard to handle. But I wanted the best, and I still do. You want the best. You want the real best opportunity to be the best you can be. And we, in fairness, Stephen Banahan, who was our chairman at the time, and Tommy Keane, I before him, they made sure the players were well looked after. Tommy Carr was brilliant. He made sure the players were well looked after. You know, and to be fair, we got to our Ireland quarterfinals.
Yeah, What would Mahon say back to you if you were to ask him? Like, would you have a serious conversation about it, or would you just be kind of half messing and, you know, a bit of a joke, but being serious as well? Like, would he?
No, because I've never sat down and have it. I know exactly where it came from. So, you know, it's actually quite funny because we were playing. Bridget's were playing Salt Hill in the Connacht Club Championship. 2005 Connacht final, and look, to be honest, by all accounts, if you read all the reports, I actually give it that particular day. It was an exhibition of goalkeeping and kicking the ball out, and this, the Salt Hill guys came afterwards actually and asked them to come up and prepare them for their All-Ireland semi-final with kickouts and things like that. And nobody could understand in Roscommon why the five of us were let go together. But in particular, you know, there was one or two of us who were known to be really good with young lads. We were known to be, you know, we were known to be kind of encouraging young people along and bringing them together and wanting them to do the best. But it's like in any small community, you know, you've got people who've got their own agendas. You've got people who have their own mechanisms of wanting to handle things. And unfortunately for Mahon, it ended up being a real black mark on his CV because he was hounded out really by the supporters in the end. He didn't ever get off on the right foot. results went bad. But I don't necessarily, it's the people inside the county. Actually, some of them weren't even farmers, coming, funnily enough, but one or two were, that had their own agendas against whoever it was, whether it was me or Deneen or one of the five of us, or the five of us in total. And they just blackened us, and they gave Mahon that opportunity to get rid. But yeah, he never really recovered from it. And, you know, that's his, look at that, that was his mistake, I felt at the time. I was writing in the Champion here and things like that. To always give players the opportunity to play themselves off, or yeah, at least say, well, okay, you come in, this is the way I operate, you operate under this particular structure, or you don't. And not to get that chance, I think, was wrong. And for it to finish the way it finished, with the kind of big queries and question marks over whether you were divisive or not, wasn't right then. And I think, as I said in the programme, it's not right now either. And it wouldn't happen if you were from a certain, or as I think I said in the thing, if you wore the suit of the state, it wouldn't happen.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I completely agree. Like, I mean, every Laois manager, new manager, always gave me a chance. They might have got rid of me after, but at least you have to respect them for giving you the chance to maybe play your way, play your off team. Come here, one funny couple of random ones before I let you go, Cake. 2003 Connacht final against Galway. You put Vaseline on your hand and you rubbed it into the gloves of what, the Galway keeper, Keane, was it?
Alan Keane, yeah.
Did he drop any?
Yeah.
Is it what? No, is this a regular?
To be honest about it, was a fucking harebrained idea. But Adrian Tully was our masseuse at the time. He was our physio at the time. Adrian's a great guy. Adrian played in goal for Roscommon hurlers. Great goalkeeper, brilliant goalkeeper. He was Davy Fitzgerald like, you know. But Tull and I would always be talking. Like, I'd be down with Tull maybe twice, three times a week. Is there any way we can get an agent, this, that, but I said, do you know what, Tull? I think we could put gloves, Vaseline on the gloves of Kane, and if nothing else, it'll disrupt them. And if it's windy or wet in what do you call it, in Pierce Park, which normally always was, it might disrupt them. You never know. Fancy winds to throw in. We'll let one in on top of Carroll and we'll see what goes on, you know.
Sorry to cut you off. So there's two parts of this. So either he doesn't notice that it's on it and it slips through his hands, or he notices that it's on it and it gets inside his head. Which kind of angle were you going?
What happened was, you know, when you're finished I knew Kano very well because his mom and dad actually were building a house over in it was actually very funny because they were building it over where the club is there, poor Joyce's club as well, Killer Irvine. And Alan's mother and father were building a house, and I'd be there regular enough, and I'd see Alan, and we'd always be chatting and blah, blah, blah. So I got a chance to, you know, after the walk around, you know the parade and that?
Yeah.
Alan had a beeline, I was making a beeline for Alan. Just give me five, Alan, blah, blah. He had a big hand, and I had a big hand. Bang, the big swab of Vaseline onto his hand. And he was running down, and then I could see him turning around. He's only just getting this now, right? And Manny was going... Manny was going balubas, right? He was going ballistic at this, right? And I could see them then sitting down, somebody that changed the gloves and all that, and he realised that there was Vaseline on them, you know. But I told him already, my new set of gloves down at the goal for me, and then it was all right for me. Look at it, mightn't have been a great thing to do, but at the time it was fantastic. You know?
That was a great idea.
Was that the only time you did the Vaseline trick, or did it become a regular thing?
Oh, Jesus, no, this is the only time, because after that, really, it's only word of mouth, really, that, you know, you have to watch what's going on, you know, that type of thing. Dublin that year as well, I think, and Tuxton was, of course, again, the march around the whole lot, and you know how you normally shake hands with. Nobody was shaking hands with me anymore, and I couldn't fathom it out, so... Obviously, Manny and a few of the boys, let them know watch Gordon or whatever it was. But look, it was one of those things. You know, I was looking for a bloody bit of an age, you know. So, Gordon were probably better than us at the time, the war, and we were just looking for some way we could get a little bit of an age on them. Funny enough, we had a good year that year, and I think that was our first trip, first professional trip, kind of training in the Manga and things like that. So it was very good.
So word had got out by this stage, and Cluxton was too wise for you and pulled his hand away.
Yeah, absolutely. He wasn't the only one. Like, I mean, there'd be plenty more. You know, you could play in the league games as well. No one would shake hands. No one acknowledge you at all. You know, so I just fucking gave it up after that. If you shake hands after the game, all right. The game was over. That was the end of it. You know, so yeah, it was funny. It was just one of those things. You know, when you get a reputation for trying stuff and then people avoid you, you know.
Yeah, come here. Classic. A bit of a weird one to finish up on here, Cake. It's the blood, the bag of blood. Now you're going to have to explain the whole situation, the bag of blood. This is definitely a new one on me.
Well, you know, Willie, you know. I suppose I'm wired completely. My wife would say I'm wired completely different than anybody else, so that's fine. So you have to kind of accept these type of things. So maybe the week coming up to the Galway kind of championship. You know, you're looking for different kind of ways of motivating lads, and you know that half time is going to come, or before the game, you're going to have to kind of do something maybe that'll grab their attention or shake one or two into order or into orbit or whatever it may be and get them performing a bit better. So anyhow, look at me. In that Galway game, funny enough, half time was coming and blah blah blah. We hadn't played that well or as well as we could have had, but yet we were close enough. We were in touch. And there was an opportunity maybe to beat them above Empire Stadium and go on to a Connacht final. And Tommy came in. I just vaguely remember that around the dressing room, and everyone was having their usual chaw and wondering, you know, what they're going to do. And Graham stood up, and Deneen and Frankie. And as captain, you're just waiting for that moment. You know, that moment in time. That's your own time. Your own 30 seconds of peace with them, and just try to kind of maybe, you know, get something into their heads that could make a difference. So Tommy finished his speech and I said, look at that, come on, you know the usual stuff, you're getting them all together and blah blah blah. And I had the blood in my bag that I carefully prepared that week when my wife carefully prepared it to be fair, because I'd come home from the doctor's after taking the pint of blood off my arm and I just threw it in a plastic bag on top of the shelves. You can't do that, you've been a nurse, you know, you have to put that in the freezer to just protect it. So anyhow, I done that and brought it with me and it was funny, because when I think about it, you know how you're looking for that moment, you know, you just grab somebody or you hit something on the floor or you hammer the table or whatever it might be, you know. Well, it's just lucky that the blood bag, the blood bags are extremely robust. They're very, very robust. And luckily enough, because a pint of blood, while it doesn't sound like an awful, you know, a pint of Guinness isn't an awful lot you drink. It's only a pint of Guinness, like, you know, you'd love one now. But a pint of blood can do a serious, serious amount of, like, you know, the film Mel Gibson was in, Braveheart, you know. So it's like one of those kind of moments, you know. So I got the bag of blood anyhow. Really, the coup d'etat was coming, bang, and I hammered the blood bag right into the floor, right? And no one really understood what the bloody hell was in it. This is Roscommon blood. And I told them it was my blood, and blah, 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 let's go and we steal this blood, and we fucking beat Galway today, you know. But the blood bag didn't burst. Luckily, you know.
And did you expect the blood bag to burst and burst onto people and everyone go, rah, and that's it, it's terrible?
Oh, yeah. I was fucking worried. Where had they gone out now? I'd be fucking mad at blood. I'd be wondering what the fuck is going on, you know? You better edit this out. You better edit that fucking blood. But yeah. And Tommy was saying, this is mad. I was a captain, and I had to do something different, luckily enough, it fucking didn't burst, you know, because if it burst, it would have been a scene, you know, it would have been carnage altogether.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, a blood bag is not the thing you want, you know.
Yeah,
funny enough, Carl Mannion to this day actually would say that you got that blood from a cow or a sheep or something like that, you know, Carlo. I had to get it from myself, Carl. I couldn't get it from the sheep out in the field, you know. But yeah, it was one of those.
Maybe that's the story John Mahan heard.
Well, maybe that's the story John Mahan heard. I don't know. I'm sure he probably was told plenty of stories, but you look at that's the Gange, that's the crack, you know. So
it's a classic.
We had good fun playing, and actually, to be fair, you played that time as well. It was actually fun enough time to play the game, you know. you know, at least you were seeing Croke Park now and again. We were the first Roscommon team to actually be in Croke Park for quite some time in 2003, because in 2001, when we won the Connacht Championship, which was the first year of the back door, they brought us to Castlebar to play Galway the second time. And I think before that, it was 1991 in the All-Ireland semi-final was the last time our Scotland team had been to Croke Park. So, you know, it was kind of a novelty as well, getting up there that year. And we had a decent year. We ran Kerry close. And the following year, again, we were close to Dublin, but we just couldn't make the breakthrough, unfortunately.
Yeah. Before I let you go, one last point. You designed the kicking tee. And I remember this going on at the time. Like, I mean, the bit of plastic, the couple of brushy parts coming up, like a sweeping brush and kicking it off it. Like, do any current goalkeepers ever name check you or give you credit or anything for that? Because I think that's been completely forgotten, that you were the one that designed that. I remember a bit of talk about it at the time, but like all the goalkeepers use it. They're incredibly helpful. And, you know, I'm just wondering, would any current goalkeepers ever, you know, I don't know, send you a message or anything about it?
I have the current goalkeeper use it too, but to be honest about it, I have to give credit to my own county chairman at the time, Stephen Banahan, and Pat Daly, who was head of games in Croke Park at the time. They actually commissioned me to come and they were making the rule change that time in 2004 to bring in a tee for the goalkeepers, because injuries were becoming very prevalent. So Pat actually and Stephen commissioned me to actually come together and meet them in Croke Park to come up with an idea for a kicking tee, and I developed the idea then with a friend of mine. I had the idea for long. It's funny actually that it came, because in about early 90s, I ended up playing in goal for my club, Castlereagh St. Kevin's, and I never will forget at the time a referee called Sean Manani. Sean was a great friend of mine, has been to this day, and we used to have our banter and that, but we were playing Clannagale in the league game, and it was one of the few times that time that I played in goal. But that time in the summers were so hard, and the pitches, you were coming out of winter, they were uneven, they were bloody, you know, there were no grass on them, blah, blah, blah. It was a great summer. One time I used at the bottom of a Coke bottle to kind of elevate the ball, because you couldn't get a divot in the ground, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't get away with it at that time, but... funny enough, 10 or 12 years later, then Pat commissioned me to come with something for the GAA. It's still, the tee is the only one that's licensed by the GAA. So it's the only licensed product that can be used. And now other goalkeepers use different stuff themselves that suits their own style of kicking. But the punty has been a very, very big success indeed for the GAA and for goalkeepers. And look at it, it was nice to be involved and nice to be asked to be involved to do something like that. At a time when they were changing the rules, you know, maybe they could change it for free kick, you know, and let fellas take frees off the ground, you know, that way.
No, I don't think it will. Come here, Shane. I've taken up enough of your time. I'm looking forward. Well, listen, I'm sure everyone else is looking forward to it tonight. I've already seen it. You haven't, so I'm sure you're looking forward to it. So it's on Lake Regale. It's on at 9:30 on TG Cahir tonight. I'm right in saying that?
With trepidation, I hasten to add. I'm looking forward to. Well, I think the family I'm looking forward to, maybe, you know. And as I said, huge honour, and I'd like to thank everybody that's coached me and managed me or tried to manage me. All the players I played with, and you know, it's not been mentioned in the show, but obviously, Athlone Town was a good part of my life as well, and some great people in that club over the years, and. Look, I've been fortunate, really. I've met some great people. I think that's really what gets lost in the whole lot. I've met some great people, have some great friends. Can go anywhere like yourself. Sometimes you get a bit of abuse, but what about? You enjoy it, and we all enjoy it, and we all enjoy trying to make a difference. And I'd like to thank all those people that helped me throughout my career and throughout my life.
Okay, great stuff, Shane. Thanks very much. Talk to you again.
Thanks very much, Willie. Gentlemen.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I won't see you later, but not.